The Wizen Gamut. The Monday after the Valentine's ball found the breakfast table quiet and sullen. Quentin, who was frowning over the top of his newspaper, decided this definitely indicated disaster on the horizon.
"Dad,"
Teddy piped up cheerfully as he poked at his eggs,
"you had a lot of nightmares last night. I had to come wake you up."
Timothy, of course, found this interesting.
"Would you always have nightmares, Lupin?"
"He always has nightmares,"
Teddy nodded knowingly.
"Every night. He's had them his whole life. He told me so."
Lupin put down his daily profit and gave Teddy an irritated look.
"Thank you, Teddy," he replied crossly. "Go on, then. Tell everyone all the details of my private life, will you?"
Apparently, Teddy was too young to appreciate sarcasm. He chewed thoughtfully on his eggs for a moment.
"Well,"
he finally announced,
"my dad doesn't wear any pants when he sleeps."
"Teddy!" Lupin shouted, but it was too late. A great deal of laughter had already ensued.
"Well, you don't, Dad!"
his son hollered back stubbornly.
"He only wears these boxing shorts that muggles wear and a t-shirt."
Rosie began giggling furiously.
"The boxer shorts, Teddy. Anyway, I don't think anybody wants to know what your dad wears to bed."
She paused for dramatic effect.
"Except maybe Grandmother!"
That was it. The table exploded into bedlam.
"Rosie!"
Lupin snarled and threw down his paper. Lady Fanshawe let out a piercing shriek. Jamie and Tim toppled over laughing. The quadruplets started bawling. Kenny let out a demonic cackle, and Victor choked on his Bloody Mary and toppled unceremoniously to the ground. Richard leapt up in a rage, his face purple.
"I won't stand for this, I say!" he screamed. "I won't be cuckolded in my own house!"
This only led to more screams of laughter.
"Shut the fuck up!" Quentin shouted, and there was a brief interlude of silence. "Richard, sit down! Lupin's not doing anything with your wife! Rosie, must you blurt out every stupid thought that goes through your head?"
"I'm sorry!"
Rosie wailed and burst into genuine tears. She and Victor jumped up in a huff and stormed away from the table, while Victor began making retching noises, and that seemed to end everyone's appetite for breakfast. When Quentin entered Lupin's study, he was writing on parchment with his quill pen and ink, but stopped hastily and thrust the scroll in his desk drawer.
"Writing your will?" Quentin asked him dispassionately.
"Letters," Lupin replied wearily. "I'm giving them to you before the trial. I'll trust you to hand them out if I don't come back."
"And if you do come back?" Quentin said blandly.
"Well, you'll return them to me unopened now, won't you?"
"Certainly," Quentin replied quietly, and Lupin got up and walked over to the window. "What worries you most?" Quentin asked after a few moments of silence.
"Teddy,"
Lupin responded roughly and started pacing around the room.
"I know there's a lot of people who will look after him, but I can't stand to think of him crying. I hate being away from him for a week, let alone a year or longer. I hate being alone."
"Why wouldn't you?" Lupin shook his head in disgust.
"I don't know. I feel like a coward. Got all these damn citations for bravery."
He indicated the mounted parchments rather bitterly.
"And I'm scared to death. I feel like smashing them all up this morning."
"For God's sake," Quentin snapped impatiently. "Have you ever turned away from danger?"
Lupin thought about this for a while.
"No,"
he replied finally.
"Can't say that I have."
"Well, then you've deserved them," Quentin told him firmly. "And they're not sending you anywhere. Don't you trust Harry with this?"
"Well, I'd rather have him on my side than anybody else. He's the golden boy of the Wizarding World, you know. But I'd rather we were facing 20 Death Eaters than the Wizen Gamut. It's a damn court of law."
"Look," Quentin said in a concerned tone, "you've got to do something today besides pace around worrying about this."
"I suppose I'll go to the forest,"
Lupin replied thoughtfully, and Quentin smiled. He had long ago known the Forbidden Forest was Lupin's favorite place to be alone and think, but he still found it amusing.
"Say hello to the giant spiders for me, will you?" he said lightly.
"Certainly," Lupin responded cheerfully. "I told a couple of them once that I had a muggle friend who named his stallion after Aragog."
I am not even having this conversation, Quentin thought to himself. He's the weirdest fucker ever. There were some things one couldn't get used to, even after 12 years.
"And what did they say?"
"They started crying,"
Lupin shrugged.
"They're awfully sentimental about him."
When Harry arrived in Lupin's study at 9 the next morning, he was surprised to find a small crowd in the room. William was standing off to the side, looking miserable with his pretty girlfriend who dressed as
Tonks, while the Snape fellow, I'm never going to get their names right, he thought irritably, I'll have to have William write them down or something, paced around with a murderous look on his face, and the woman he'd proposed to sat on a love seat crying. The tall fellow, who'd dressed as his dad, right, the pretty girl's twin brother, was sitting by her side making hapless attempts to comfort her, and Tim, at least I remember somebody's name, stood in front of his mother with a confused expression.
Harry, thank you.
Lupin strode forward a bit and shook his hand.
This is very good of you.
He seemed a bit subdued, but composed, wearing the shabby professorial dress robes he'd used at Hogwarts. Yeah, well, I hope so, Harry thought nervously. The whole thing seemed rather surreal. Lupin was always the one helping him. He made his best attempt at putting on a confident face, although he actually felt rather wretched and extremely anxious. He'd been up most of the night before with Ron and Hermione, planning, scrawling notes, and discussing details, but even their vociferous encouragement did not quell his fears. Lupin turned to face the crowd, Harry at his side, feeling awkward and out of place.
Tim, I know you're wondering what's up.
He briefly filled him in on the upcoming trial.
I didn't want to tell you before, in case you let it slip to Teddy.
Timothy scowled at this.
I did want to talk to you before I left, though,
Lupin added politely.
Can I have a word?
When he crossed over to the farthest end of his study, Timothy followed him with a worried expression. As they talked, Harry couldn't help wondering what Lupin was telling him. They both looked quite serious, and Harry imagined Tim was rarely serious. Timothy finally shouted out,
I promise!
And flung his arms dramatically around Lupin's neck before hurrying out the door. William and his girlfriend walked over next and spoke to him very briefly, which Harry thought was probably for the best. Since William looked as if he'd start crying at any moment, and the girlfriend was bawling already, and left the room quickly as well. The girlfriend's mother and brother went next. Lupin was apparently asking her to do something, since she kept nodding, and every now and then they would both glance at the Snape fellow, whose murderous expression suggested he could take down a whole squad of Death Eaters with one glance. I wouldn't want to get on his bad side, Harry thought wryly. He's kind of an odd person to be Remus's friend, but I guess he was good about that shooting bit. He felt even more awkward as the crowd dwindled. The Snape fellow, quit thinking of him like that, he's got a name, you idiot, spoke earnestly with his fiancée, perhaps telling her he was okay, or maybe that he'd rather she go on out, since she hugged him and left the room. Excellent, Harry thought gloomily. He was now left with the most unpleasant role of third wheel. Lupin walked over to Harry and the Snape fellow, but didn't seem to want to look either of them in the eye. Harry sighed, wishing he could turn himself into a sofa, as Slughorn had done.
Sorry, I'm really bad with names, Harry told the Snape fellow courteously,
but he merely gave him a surprised look, as if he'd forgotten he was there, and shook his hand.
Not a problem. It's Quentin. It's not as if you've books to read about us, he said politely and smiled,
but the smile did not reach his eyes. He turned dismissively away from Harry and looked at Lupin intently.
Look, as soon as this shit's over, come and tell us straightway, will you? And bring your damn chocolate. We'll be a fucking nervous wreck by then.
He scowled at this, as if to indicate his displeasure with his own emotions.
Sure,
Lupin said agreeably, and there was an awkward pause.
Yeah, right. Look, Remus, we better get going.
Harry broke in quickly, and Lupin nodded, pulled half a dozen parchment scrolls from his cloak, and handed them to Quentin.
Listen, I'm sorry about...
Lupin began.
Forget it, will you?
Quentin cut him off abruptly.
I'm surprised you've never hit me before. Well, I've wanted to, you know,
Lupin replied wryly.
Oh, go on then, you bloody werewolf,
Quentin muttered gruffly. Harry was quite amazed when this impolite remark almost reduced Lupin to tears. He stepped forward, started to shake Quentin's hand, and finally embraced him, while Harry politely appeared to be fascinated with one of the ceiling lights. While he looked back, both of them were staring in opposite directions with embarrassed expressions. He gave Quentin a courteous nod, and he and Lupin disapparated with two loud cracks. It was like returning to a nightmare, Harry thought, the sort you keep trying to wake up from but can't quite manage. He had first seen this room inside Dumbledore's pensieve when he watched the Lestranges sentenced to life imprisonment in Azkaban. Secondly, at his own hearing, and now almost a decade later, nothing seemed to have changed. The dark stone walls were dimly lit by torches, empty benches rising intimidatingly on either side of them, and up in the highest benches sat the many imposing figures of the members of the Wizengamot. There were still about 50 of them, Harry thought, most looking about 1,000 years old, their dour countenances etched in a flat gloom. Even the plum-colored robes with the silver W on the front had not changed. Harry tried not to wince when Lupin walked resolutely forward and sat in the chain-covered chair. What if I mess this up, he thought desperately, and those chains spring to life, just like they did in the Pensieve. There was some interested murmuring when Harry strode forward and stood defiantly at Lupin's side, but he could not make out the low voices or whispers. He exhaled slightly at the sight of Kingsley Shacklebolt, seated in the very middle of the front row, and relaxed even more when Shacklebolt nodded and smiled reassuringly.
"The accused being present," Kingsley began in his deep, sonorous voice, "let us begin. Disciplinary hearing the 17th of February into offences committed under the decree for the misuse of magic against muggles by Remus John Lupin. Interrogators, Kingsley Shacklebolt, Minister of Magic, Arnold Hawthorne, Head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, Jane Bivens-Pennock, Senior Undersecretary to the Minister."
Kingsley nodded to Harry to indicate it was time for him to speak.
"Harry James Potter, witness for the defence," he stated loudly, and the murmuring began again.
"The court will state the charges," Kingsley continued in a measured tone, "and then the defense may state their position."
"The defense will first present events as they happened," Harry announced after the pompous Arnold Hawthorne had given a lengthy speech reciting the various charges and violated statutes. "This memory has been verified as accurate by the Ministry of Magic, head of the Department of Memory and Charms."
Harry waved his wand toward the empty wall to the right, and all of the heads craned in the direction in unison. A replay of the scene appeared on the wall, and the court watched intently as the breakfast scene unfolded and the Mansionites began acting up one by one. Harry heard an older witch snort disapprovingly when Timothy jumped on his chair and began shouting, and there was a gasp when the food fight began.
"Dreadful muggles! Shocking!"
Someone else giggled when Lupin told the group he'd rather have breakfast with a pack of Dementors, but Harry braced himself for the stunning scene, which he knew would not go over well. He was relieved when the scene ended, and with a flick of his wand, the memory disappeared.
"As the court has seen," Harry said determinedly, "the accused was subject to an extreme and inordinate amount of provocation, and made multiple attempts at reasoning with the muggles, which met with no success. The defense would also like the court to note that no physical harm was caused to any muggle as a result of being stunned."
The murmuring became louder, and Harry raised his voice.
"The defense recognizes that the law does not permit the stunning of muggles, even under provocation."
"Then you admit this action was wrong?"
rang out the raspy voice of the senior undersecretary, an ancient tiny little witch with a prune-like face.
"Absolutely,"
Lupin replied without hesitation.
"And do you not feel that you, as an Auror, should be held to an even higher standard of behavior?"
she snapped out triumphantly, and Harry tried not to wince.
"That old bitch is going to kill us," he thought sourly. "Yes, I would agree to that,"
Lupin responded soberly.
"The law is the law," Kingsley intoned sternly. "Does not deal with one individual more harshly than another, regardless of their profession."
He turned to stare meaningfully, almost threateningly, Harry thought, at the court.
"It is, however, expected to show leniency when leniency is clearly indicated."
This led to a loud outburst of muttering from a group seated in the back, which Harry knew was the anti-werewolf faction.
"He makes these guilty!" one of them hollered out angrily. "There's no need for a trial! We should proceed immediately to sentencing!"
"The defense does not deny the charges!" Harry shouted back vehemently. "The defense is stating that leniency should be applied. Leniency should be applied due to the past exemplary conduct and character of the accused, who has received the Order of Merlin first degree 2 times, and second degree 4, 12 citations for acts of heroism and bravery during both wars against Voldemort."
He thought he saw Shacklebolt smirk when he put special emphasis on the name, causing more than a few of the older witches to gasp with alarm.
"And as captain of the Order of the Phoenix, has spent the last 8 years helping keep our world at peace."
He paused and looked up at Kingsley.
"May I speak freely, sir?"
"You may."
Kingsley nodded gravely, and more angry murmuring and muttering began.
"This is a court of law. Can't have this business, I say."
"I should think," Kingsley said in an ominous voice, "that Harry Potter, of all people, has earned the right to speak freely in any court in this land."
This embarrassed Harry, but it stopped the murmuring.
"Continue, Mr. Potter," Kingsley pronounced serenely.
By 2 p.m., the group huddled around the end of the dinner table was quite tense and unhappy.
"I can't stand this bloody waiting!"
William shouted angrily and leapt up from his chair.
"What are we to do?"
Rosie shrieked dramatically.
"This is horrible!"
would be a bit easier if we knew what the hell was going on, Quentin said angrily and turned to William. Aren't you the fucking wizard? Can't you do something?
Do you think I would if I could? William yelled back furiously. I can't show you what's happening in another place. That's really difficult magic. I'm not bloody Dumbledore.
He and Quentin exchanged malevolent looks.
Both of you, stop that yelling, Solange told them sternly. Quentin, you know if there was any way he could do something, William would do it. It's his uncle and he's worried to death.
Quentin actually appeared a bit ashamed after she made this pronouncement. Sorry, he muttered to William.
It's fine, William rejoined unhappily. Look, I'll go see Sybil and borrow a crystal ball. I probably can't do it, but I can try.
He disapparated with a bang.
Sybil?
Timothy asked in a puzzled voice.
Trelawney, the divination professor, Quentin replied shortly. Good God, I hope he doesn't bring her back with him. She wants to make some damn predictions that will undoubtedly include his painful demise.
Some of you may have wondered why I kept myself out of the public eye, Harry began. You know, not done any interviews or answered many questions.
This was quite off the subject, but much too interesting for the court members to raise objection. And besides, they reminded themselves, Shacklebolt had given him permission to speak freely.
I didn't like people bragging about me, Harry said fiercely, because I knew I'd had a lot of help getting through in the first place, and I would have died except for all the people that saved me, like Ron and Hermione and Professor Dumbledore and Professor Lupin, when he stood up to that Dementor on the train.
The court leaned forward with curiosity as Harry warmed to his subject and began speaking more from his heart than as a defense attorney.
Yeah, I was angry when the books came out about a bunch of things, but I was glad they came out too, because a lot of people got credit for what they'd done, especially Snape, but I knew there was one person who really didn't get the credit he deserved, Harry continued determinedly, and that was Lupin. Ginny wasn't very happy with her grade in his class, and she did the least accurate job she could without, well, me and Neville giving her a really bad time.
He smiled and was surprised when some of the court members actually smiled as well.
She showed how he helped me and all, but like I told her, he was the one that first made me think I can actually be a decent wizard. She showed pretty well the kind of person he was, in spite of how he'd been mistreated in the past by anti-werewolf groups,
he practically hollered, and Shacklebolt ducked his head and smiled.
You all know I was a Horcrux, Harry continued calmly, pleased when several of them nearly jumped out of their chairs. Part of me was Voldemort, and everybody knows I was angry and all that, but Ginny left out a lot of the talks I had with Lupin. I was going through it. I was at Grimmauld once on halls, and Sirius was passed out upstairs.
There was some stifled laughter at this, which stopped immediately when Kingsley shot them a wrathful look.
And I said I couldn't fight anymore, and Remus said something to me. It's all about making the right choice, Harry, regardless of how you feel.
He paced around for a few moments, his voice shaking with barely concealed emotion. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Lupin watching him with a surprised and intent look on his face, but he didn't dare look him in the eye. He had a feeling they'd both start crying.
When it was the end, and I knew I'd have to give myself up to Voldemort, well, I wasn't quite so brave as Ginny made me out to be.
He laughed harshly.
I wasn't even brave at all. I just sat down on the grace and I thought, fuck this, I can't do it. Such language! I've never, even from Harry Potter!
The enormous gavel banged itself frantically on the stone floor and began shrieking, but Kingsley's voice was what shut everybody up.
The court will be silent! Harry, please.
This was said rather wearily, and Harry looked at him with surprise. He's worried, too. Sometimes Harry thought it was difficult to remember Shacklebolt had feelings.
I would like to apologize to the court for my language, Harry said immediately. Especially to the Minister of Magic, for whom I have the utmost respect.
Shacklebolt looked as if he might fall off his chair. I mean it, Harry thought defiantly. And I like this speaking my mind a bit. Maybe I will give an interview.
So, I was thinking I couldn't do it. And I heard Lupin's voice, saying it was all about me making a choice, no matter how I felt. So I thought, well, I don't feel like doing it. I don't even feel like I can do it. I'm going to choose to do it. And I did.
And if I may interrupt, Kingsley said politely and fixed the court members with another foreboding look, that decision is exactly why we are all sitting here alive and well today.
Harry, he nodded.
I know you're trained to follow the law, Harry continued determinedly. And I know you'll feel like you've got to uphold justice and all that, but
You know what the right choice is. Well, most of you do anyway, he said derisively and looked pointedly at the anti-werewolf faction in the back.
That's all I'm asking you to do. Make the right choice. No matter how you feel.
When William apparated back into the room, he was holding a large crystal ball, and everyone at the table leapt up with excitement.
It might not work, he said warningly as he placed it gingerly in the middle of the table. Revelo Lupin!
Some obscure and shadowy figures appeared within the ball, but they were quite dark and no sound could be heard. The figures became darker still and disappeared.
Damn! William shouted in frustration. Try with Lupin's wand, Quentin barked out. It's not a wand, it's a wizard, William shot back furiously.
It can't hurt to try, Rosie and Solange wailed in unison.
Fine.
William fished through his pocket and pulled out another wand.
That's odd, he frowned.
What?
Rosie broke in.
This is the wand he handed me when he left, but I don't think it's his.
Looks like it to me, Quentin snapped.
Yeah, it looks like it, but it's different.
You fucking try it, Quentin shouted.
Revelo Lupin,
William yelled out angrily and flung the wand towards the crystal ball. In an instant, it was lit up with color and sound, and the courtroom was as clearly visible as if they were standing within it.
Well, I guess that's his wand, isn't it?
Quentin smirked nastily, but William just pocketed it and sat down to stare at the proceedings along with the rest of them.
Why did you think?
Rosie whispered.
It's not his wand, okay?
William hissed.
I'm not arguing with your bloody muggle dad about wands. We just know shite. Watch.
Rosie scowled at this. She obviously did not take kindly to the use of the word muggle as some sort of insult. Well, I'm not fussing at him now, she told herself sternly. He's just scared. When Harry finished his speech, Solange began clapping enthusiastically, and Timothy jumped excitedly up onto his chair. Rosie glanced worriedly at her father and William, who didn't seem quite as enthused.
Yeah, he told them,
Timothy shouted happily.
They better listen to Harry Potter.
That was a really good speech,
Solange declared firmly.
Well, it was a good speech, William said heatedly. But you don't know the wisdom gamut.
Rosie looked speechlessly from William to Quentin.
Dramatic speeches, Quentin said slowly, always work well in a movie courtroom trial. Not so much in a real court of law, where they aren't persuaded by emotion.
Then what persuades them?
Rosie shrieked.
Bribery. Threats, Quentin replied shortly. Things of that sort. All the sort of things Lupin would never do.
Harry felt as exhausted as if his brain had been wrung through some muggle washing machine like Petunia used to use. As the court members trailed out of the room to discuss sentencing, he was relieved to see a cushioned chair appear next to Lupin and dropped into it immediately.
Harry, Lupin told him quietly, I shouldn't have asked you to do this. Defending a guilty person's a rather bad job.
They can be lenient, Harry burst out in a horrified voice. Don't talk like that.
They could, Lupin said in a strangely formal voice. They could if they were so inclined. But that will have nothing to do with you.
Why are you saying this?
Harry shouted and jumped off the chair.
You think they're going to send you off? You're saying this to make me feel better?
Lupin did not reply. The dinner table had never been so quiet.
He thinks he's going to get sent, William finally whispered in a strangled tone.
I don't believe it,
Solange wailed and burst into tears. When Quentin said nothing, Rosie jumped up, terrified.
What do you think, Dad?
He's nearly always right,
Quentin replied in a mechanical sort of voice. Harry was certain at least 12 hours had passed. Neither he nor Lupin had spoken, and Lupin had kept himself still, although Harry noticed there were beads of sweat on his forehead. Both of them jumped when the first Wizengamot member filed in with his impassive face, but it was Kingsley they were searching for. When he entered the door, Lupin gave him a desperate glance, and Shacklebolt closed his eyes for a moment, as if he couldn't bear to look at him. Harry ducked his head and blinked furiously. The senior undersecretary began reciting the list of charges again, carrying on until it was a distinct relief when she stopped for her dramatic announcement.
The Wizengamot sentences Remus John Lupin to a term of 10 years in the prison of Azkaban.
The words seemed to ring through Lupin's head in concentric circles, slowly filtering down through his brain and settling across his body, until he felt entirely numb. His first coherent thought was of Sirius. This is how he felt, he wondered, when he sat in this chair and they sentenced him. 10 years, life, same thing. I won't get out alive. He imagined it wasn't. Sirius had undoubtedly started shouting at them with his typically colorful language and fought off 10 guards before being stunned into submission.
But Lupin didn't feel any sort of anger at all, only a hollow despair, as the chain snapped tightly around his wrists and ankles. An eerie, airless silence settled around the table.
"I don't believe it,"
Rosie finally whispered.
"I don't believe it. It isn't fair. This isn't fair."
She burst into tears and jumped up from the table.
"They can't, they can't, they can't,"
Timothy shouted. Everyone was startled when the front door opened. They'd quite forgotten about the time. Teddy, home from kindergarten, hung up his book bag with a cheerful expression, his sunny yellow hair a testimony that he'd had a very good day.
"Who can't do what?"
he said in a puzzled voice as he stood in the entranceway. "Alone. He's just standing there alone. This kid's an orphan." Quentin picked up the crystal ball and threw it to the floor, where it shattered into thousands of pieces and stomped out of the room. He sat down on his bed after dismissing the hovering Parks, telling himself sternly he couldn't put this off forever. It was difficult to unroll the scroll, however, since his hands were shaking, and as soon as he saw Lupin's familiar loping scrawl, his eyes filled with tears. In the past, he'd occasionally found notes from him in odd places, always when he was going through a particularly difficult time. Once under his horse's saddle, once in a jacket pocket, once by his dinner plate, which always seemed to say exactly what he needed to hear. This one did not.
"Quentin, I've always felt you put too much responsibility upon yourself, and I'm sorry to be the one adding more. It's necessary, though, and I know I can trust you to do it. If I go to Azkaban, I won't return. Werewolves aren't popular with the other prisoners. I won't have my wand, and I'll be quite outnumbered. 3 to 6 months is about the longest I'll last there. I don't think William and Teddy need to know this right away, but I'd like you to prepare them for it after a few weeks. I'd like to thank you for your friendship, which has meant more to me than I could properly express, particularly the days you spent with me that no one else wanted to. It always helped. Remember me at my best, will you? Remus, also known as the Bloody Werewolf."
He'd done all right, Quentin thought later, although it was difficult to read when your eyes are blurred with tears, until he read the last line, and then he knelt down beside the bed and buried his head in his arms. When Quentin turned up at Elizabeth's doorway with a scroll and the news about Lupin, he was surprised to see her turn very pale. For a moment, he thought she might actually faint and took her by the arm and walked her to the sofa.
"I'm so sorry, Quentin. I know you two are very close,"
she whispered, which astonished him even more. "I must look really bad if Elizabeth feels sorry for me," he thought grimly, and hurried out to deliver the rest of the letters. Elizabeth stared at the crackling flames for a few moments, trying to take this all in, and then unrolled the parchment carefully and read it through 3 times.
"Elizabeth, if you're reading this, we won't see one another again, so you've no need to feel embarrassed. I want to set some things right in my life, and this is one of them. I've never felt you were to blame for the events with your mother, or those of the day preceding it. You had every reason to want to find answers I should have given you before. I know you still feel guilty about what went on the day before, but you really mustn't. It was all started unwillingly on your part, and I know you've always been faithful to Victor. How he's ended up has been his own choice. You can't protect someone from their own decisions. You stayed with him longer than anyone else would have, and you deserve some happiness as well. I wish there'd been a different ending to our story, but I'm reminded I'm not the author. The days I spent with you when I was younger were the best days of my life, and I can't feel sorry for myself when there are those like Severus who never knew love with the woman that owned their heart. He once accused me, quite rightly, of never saying goodbye to you. I'm afraid I haven't improved in that respect. Forgive me. Remus John Lupin."
Elizabeth stared at the letter for a long time, and then burst into tears. After the senior undersecretary had finished speaking, she sat down with a great show of satisfaction, and Kingsley stood up.
"At this time, I am formally resigning my position as Minister of Magic," he announced coldly, and there was a collective gasp from the group. "I shall not, and will never, have any part of a government that can allow such an abominable miscarriage of justice as this."
What? You can't!"
an old warlock with tiny glasses stammered out.
"Minister, we've had 6 years of peace with you here!"
an elderly witch wailed.
"I believe I can," Shacklebolt replied flatly. "And be certain of this. I will grant the Daily Prophet a tediously lengthy and most frighteningly melodramatic exit interview, in which I place every bit of blame for my resignation squarely on the lot of you."
"Good riddance, I say,"
screeched one of the anti-werewolf witches defiantly.
"We will get along better with another minister, when it doesn't have half-human beasts as friends."
"Shut your mouth," Kingsley spat out venomously, and the witch quickly sat down. "I believe you're all up for election next year, aren't you?"
He surveyed them coolly.
"Poor timing, I'm afraid.
I don't believe the public will take it well. Your responsibility for my resignation, that is. I've been quite popular, you know, he added unrepentantly.
Nor will they take it well, Harry shouted as he leapt from his chair, when they find out you are the reason I went to Azkaban, too. I'm pretty popular with the public myself.
There was shocked silence for a moment.
Have you lost your mind, boy?
Someone blurted out rudely, and Lupin was staring at him as if he'd had the same thought.
No, and don't call me a boy, Harry hissed angrily. I'm 25 years old and more of a man than you'll ever be. And if he's going, I'm going with him.
Why, we won't allow it,
a tiny gnome shrieked.
Just try and stop me, Harry responded nastily. I've got the Elder Wand, haven't I? I'll be going with him, and I'll stay there as long as he's there.
Harry, you will not, Lupin shouted suddenly, apparently finding his voice.
I said I will, Harry yelled back defiantly. You bloody well will not.
Order in the court,
the elf scribe wailed, and the large gavel at Kingsley's side hopped off the podium and pounded itself violently on the stone floor. The court members began angrily buzzing amongst themselves.
Think they can threaten us? Well, I need this job. Harry Potter and Azkaban will be run out of the country.
They won't have it, I tell you. The court will adjourn to discuss these new findings,
the undersecretary hollered, and they all stood up en masse and pushed their way out. Kingsley got up from the podium and walked over to Harry and Lupin.
They'll come round, he said firmly and smiled. I know them. Selfish bastards, really.
Lupin was afraid to hope, afraid to speak.
Kingsley, he can't do this. We need you.
And you as well, Remus. Shacklebolt frowned. And despite the drama involved, I meant exactly what I said.
Don't let Harry. I think Harry will do exactly as he pleases,
Kingsley interrupted sardonically.
But it won't come to that.
5 minutes hadn't passed before the court trooped back in, mumbling, murmuring, and giving Harry and Kingsley murderous looks.
The court has rethought its position on the severity of the sentence. The accused will be given a citation of warning. You are free, Mr. Lupin,
the senior undersecretary spat out with a venomous hiss. The chain sprang off, and Lupin leapt from the chair with a rapidity which amazed even him.
I believe you are incorrect in your address,
Kingsley told the senior undersecretary with the formidable scowl.
This is Captain Lupin, of the Order of the Phoenix.
Pardon me, Captain Lupin!
The woman shrilled furiously, but Kingsley looked satisfied.
I don't care what she calls me,
Lupin muttered, and Harry grinned.
You cannot give them an inch, Shacklebolt replied calmly. I've told you this before. You two come up to my office. I think we're all in need of some fire whiskey.
After 2 glasses of fire whiskey and a couple of pieces of chocolate, Lupin finally felt as if he could breathe again. He and Harry began smiling, and Kingsley was chuckling loudly over what he now referred to as the spanking of the wizengamot.
Damn, I've got to get back, Lupin said suddenly in a panicked voice. They're all worried. I should have gone back straight away, or sent an owl.
I believe you had some reason for distraction, Shacklebolt told him dryly.
It's fine, Remus. We'll go back now, Harry said reassuringly,
and the two of them waved at Shacklebolt and disappeared. They reappeared in Lupin's study, which was quite empty and desolate, and said their goodbyes. Lupin scouted out the great room and the dining hall, rather puzzled. He imagined they'd be somewhere together, huddled up and quarreling. But when he tried William's floor, that was empty too. When Solange hurried into the room and found Quentin sitting on the bed with a desolate expression, she began bawling loudly.
Darling!
She sobbed, and he kissed her on the forehead.
Solange, he said quietly, I'm going to my office for a while.
Why?
She demanded and drew back for him.
Are you mad at me?
No, that's just where I remember him best.
Lupin tried Quentin's office next, and found it empty as well, and sat himself in his favorite armchair for a moment to think. He didn't want to go wandering into people's bedrooms, but they didn't seem to be in any common meeting place. When the door opened and Quentin stomped in, he glanced over at his chair and came to a screeching halt, looking as if he'd just seen a ghost.
What the?
He stammered, and Lupin jumped up.
Sorry I'm so late. Where have you all been?
Quentin paced around for a few moments, and Lupin, for once, couldn't pick up at all what he was thinking. Finally, he strode around behind his desk and sat down.
Aren't you meant to be in Azkaban?
He said dispassionately.
Well, no,
Lupin replied in an annoyed voice. This wasn't exactly the reception he'd been expecting.
I got off. Were you hoping I would go?
Was I hoping you would go? Quentin repeated slowly and stared at him in an ominous fashion, and Lupin immediately sensed an impending danger to his person.
You can't use magic against a muggle, he reminded himself quickly. For God's sake, don't use magic against a muggle.
"What the fuck's wrong with you?" he asked Quentin irritably. "I come home, no one's anywhere around. I've got good news, and you don't pay the slightest bit pleased."
"We were watching the trial," Quentin said in a deadly voice. "In Trelawney's crystal ball. We saw the sentence."
"Bloody hell,"
Lupin barked out angrily.
"I didn't know you'd seen that. Well, they changed their damn minds. Kingsley threatened to resign, and Harry said he'd go in with me if I got sent, and they'd let me off with a warning."
"We didn't know the sentence was changed," Quentin continued threateningly. "I smashed the damn ball."
"You smashed Sybil's crystal ball?" Lupin said incredulously. "She'll fucking kill me."
"No, she won't," Quentin bellowed and jumped to his feet. "Because I'm going to kill you first." Lupin jumped up as well and backed up a few feet, and Quentin actually leapt over his desk at him.
"What the?"
Lupin darted behind a couch. Quentin tried to leap over the couch at him, and Lupin sprang the other way. "This would be quite funny," Lupin thought to himself, "if one were watching in a pensieve."
"We thought you were going off to die," Quentin bellowed wrathfully and lunged at him. "You stupid motherfucking son of a bitch! Why the fuck didn't you get back here and tell us right away? This happened hours and hours ago!"
Lupin darted away from him again rather desperately.
"I had some chocolate and drinks with Kingsley. Sorry."
Quentin looked as though he might actually implode with rage.
"You were having fucking refreshments while we were here thinking you were going off to Azkaban to die."
"Yeah. Look, I'm awfully sorry," Lupin said frantically. "I had any idea you were thinking...
Well, I forgot about the time."
He stopped and gave him a horrified look.
"You didn't read the letter, did you?"
Quentin gave him a more murderous look than he'd ever seen from any Death Eater.
"Of course I read it, you bloody fucker!"
He picked up a chair and flung it in his direction, and as Lupin leapt sideways, he followed up with a few lamps and his computer monitor, all to no effect.
"Look, I'm really sorry," Lupin yelled. "For God's sake, quit throwing shit at me!"
Quentin sat down on his couch, looking exhausted.
"I really want to beat the shit out of you," he said impassively. "But you're too fucking quick."
"Right. Did you give out the rest of the letters?"
"Of course I did,"
Quentin replied nastily and was pleased to see Lupin turn pale and appear quite embarrassed.
"All of them?"
he stammered out.
"Every last one," Quentin announced with relish. "And I hope you wrote the most sentimental pile of shite anyone's ever read, and they quote it to you every damn day."
The two of them looked at each other for a moment.
"Fuck, I can't believe you got off,"
Quentin shook his head, but he had started smiling.
"So you're still angry with me?"
"Yes, but I'm rather relieved as well."
"I've got to tell everyone else. This is awful. William and Teddy."
Lupin paused in the doorway.
"Do I need to duck the next time I see you?"
"No. Get the hell out of here." Lupin grinned at him and disapparated with a crack, while Quentin sat shaking his head. "And I thought women were a lot of trouble," he mused. "That damn werewolf is going to kill me."
"Dad! Remus! Lupin!"
Well, this is a much better reception, Lupin thought wryly, as Teddy, William, and Rosie all flung themselves at him at once.
"How are you here? We saw you get sentenced to Azkaban!"
Rosie shrieked excitedly.
"After your dad smashed the ball, they decided to let me off the warning," Lupin said cheerfully, and William winced. He'd forgotten all about the smashed crystal ball.
"This is so great!"
Rosie yelled and began bawling happily, while Teddy clung to him as if he'd never let him go again. William stood back looking rather pale, as if it hadn't quite sunk in.
"I've got to go talk to the others," Lupin said quickly. "You know, let them know I'm not going. I left Tim a letter and Caroline and..."
"I'm going with you, Dad!"
Teddy shrieked and clung to him desperately.
"I'd rather you did,"
Lupin said immediately. William finally came up and hugged him, and he and Lupin were both teary-eyed when they broke apart.
"Well, glad you're back,"
William mumbled and jammed his hands in his pockets.
"Wills, I'm really sorry about this."
William grinned at this. Lupin had not used this sobriquet since he was a little boy.
"Well, you didn't know," he replied cheerfully. "Anyway, whose one was that you gave me?"
Lupin looked at him intently.
"I thought you read your letter."
"No, I couldn't stand it," William admitted sheepishly.
"I was afraid I'd cry in front of Teddy."
He glanced at his uncle suspiciously.
"You've got your own in your pocket, don't you? Whose bloody wand is it? I've never been able to do a revealing spell like that." "I'll tell you later. Give it back."
William, however, had a very stubborn look on his face.
"No, tell me now."
Lupin handed Teddy to Rosie and dragged William out of view.
"Look," he hissed. "Do you really think Harry would leave the Elder Wand in Dumbledore's grave with him? The first place any Death Eater would look. And if he had, do you think he'd have kept it there after the books came out? He took it out, and he remembered what Dumbledore had said about power corrupting.
and for some reason thought I was the person least likely to be corrupted by it. He gave it to me.
William stared at him.
He gave you the Elder Wand? How long have you had it?
6 years.
And how often have you used it?
Never.
William looked impressed.
Damn. Well, I guess he picked the right person, didn't he?
Lupin gazed at William very intently.
I suppose. Hand it over.
William backed up suddenly with a look of horror on his face.
Oh my God. I don't want to. I really don't. This is like bloody Bilbo Baggins and that ring.
Give it to me now, Lupin said coolly. Now.
Just think of what you could do. What you could have. Anything. Anything at all. He backed farther away from Lupin.
William.
No! Fuck off!
Both of them went for their wands. Lupin, of course, was much quicker.
Expelliarmus!
The wand flew into Lupin's hand, and immediately he put it in his pocket, while giving William, who had sat down on the floor and buried his face in his hands, a concerned look.
What in the...
Rosie flew around the corner as soon as she heard Spell shouted and gave Lupin a quizzical look.
It's fine, Lupin said sternly. He's just upset with himself when he needn't be. Maybe you can talk to him, he sighed. You know he never listens to me.
Teddy was fast asleep on Lupin's shoulder after he spoke with Timothy and Caroline, and as he carefully put him down in his own bed and covered him up, he watched him for a long moment, muttering a prayer of thankfulness, and felt weak with relief. He knocked on Elizabeth's door with some trepidation. Damn, it must be 9 o'clock. This is really rude of me. And she answered it in a short blue cotton nightgown and bare feet. He didn't know which of the two of them was more surprised as they stood and stared at each other.
What?
She opened the door with an astonished expression on her pale face, and he entered feeling rather foolish. A bottle of wine was open on the table in front of her couch, and her eyes were red-rimmed and swollen, her hair disheveled.
She's been crying. Liz.
Listen, I'm sorry to bother you, he blurted out. Apparently it was a bit of a mix-up. Quentin watched me get sentenced, and then he smashed the crystal ball, and nobody saw the end of it. But it turns out I got off. Is Victor up?
Can you possibly sound more like an idiot? Are you a second year? Elizabeth gave him a half smile.
You know he's passed out by now. So you're not going at all? It's all over with,
she said nervously.
Yeah, it was... Well, it's a long story. They just gave me a warning.
Well, I'm glad,
she replied, and a bit of color came back into her face.
I kept thinking about Teddy.
Did you? He blurted out. Anybody else?
Fuck, what a stupid, desperate thing to...
No, she said sternly. I've only been crying because I felt so sorry for Teddy.
You know who I was thinking of. Are you happy now?
I am, actually,
he replied cheerfully.
I think I'm the happiest person in the world at the moment.
Will you sit down?
She asked primly.
Sure,
he replied promptly and sat down on her chaise lounge. At least we're speaking to each other, he thought quickly. It was quite awful to see her embarrassed and wanting to flee expression every time he walked into a room, and she seemed even more unnerved by him, he wouldn't have thought it possible, after the Valentine's Day ball. When he sat down, she wordlessly gestured to the wine, and he summoned up an empty goblet, making sure it was a large one, and filled it up.
I've been thinking about your letter, she said quietly. I know I kept defending myself about the sleeping draught to Victor, but I've always known I was at fault. And there wasn't any need for you to apologize.
Well, there was. I should have told you before.
He took a long drink and put down his goblet, watching the emotion in her dark blue eyes, and trying to discern exactly what it was.
And I've been thinking about what you said about Victor, she added.
And?
He looked up a bit too quickly and mentally chastised himself.
You're quite right, she said decisively. 19 years is long enough to try and convince yourself someone's going to change. It was pretty stupid.
You're a very loyal person,
Lupin responded gently.
That isn't stupid at all. Well, I am. I mean, well, I made a promise,
she replied disconsolately.
As did he. One that he broke 1,000 times over,
he snapped out angrily. Elizabeth looked outside the window with a pensive expression.
I wish this winter were over. It's been horrible,
she whispered.
In what way?
Lupin said worriedly.
Well, now we all know Loretta's crazy, don't we? I don't see Solange half as much as I used to. I'm not saying I'm not glad she's happy.
She gave him an anguished look, and Lupin leaned forward and gazed at her intently. He was startled when she burst into tears. Apparently, she'd had more wine than he realized.
Oh, everything. You're right, I've always been faithful to Victor, but he gets worse every year. My parents are getting old, and I'm going to be quite alone eventually.
Her voice trailed off, and she snatched up a Kleenex and blew her nose.
I can't keep it all to myself forever,
she burst out ferociously.
Why can't I tell anyone? Why?
She sobbed harder than ever, and Lupin took her hands in his.
Tell anyone what, Elizabeth?
I should tell you, though,
she wailed.
You're the one that needs to know.
Lupin thought he had never been more confused in his life.
Elizabeth, you could tell me anything you want, he said earnestly and fixed her with his compassionate gaze. Please, I'll do anything to help you.
Elizabeth looked at the floor and her sobs became more muffled.
Well, it's that I had a son. I did, and he was real. He was real, even if I only had him for a few hours.
Lupin was quite shocked by this, but forced himself to maintain an impassive expression.
When did this happen?
Elizabeth ignored the question.
Do you think it was loyal of me to stay with Victor because he drinks? That wasn't the worst part of it. It was that he was sterile. He wouldn't ever agree to adoption. You know how much I always wanted children.
What? What is she? Everything seemed unreal again, just as it had a few hours ago.
Are you saying?
He stuttered out.
Yes, what do you think? You said it yourself in your letter. I've always been faithful to Victor.
That was the only day. The day that we...
Lupin jumped up and walked agitatedly back and forth in front of the couch.
Why didn't you tell me this?
He said in a horrified voice.
You've kept this to yourself all this time. What happened?
How can I tell you anything?
Elizabeth replied heatedly.
You left and I didn't know where you were. I couldn't exactly go with Victor to visit and tell you then.
Shit, shit, holy shit, I never even thought of that.
Liz, I'm sorry,
Of course I kept it to myself,
Elizabeth continued miserably, as if he hadn't spoken.
Mother and Solange knew he was sterile. And I guess I could have tried to pass it on for some miracle or something, but I don't like to lie,
she said vehemently.
And I felt really guilty. I knew it was my own fault for what I'd done to you and everything else we did. I thought it was God's punishment on me. I thought I could try and hide it, so I told everyone I had mono and stayed in bed and kept a lot of pillows about me.
What were you going to do? He managed to say after a moment.
I knew this midwife. She was the one I got the draught from that I gave you.
She burst out and started crying again.
She was going to deliver the baby, and then her daughter would raise him. And she lived nearby, so at least I'd be able to see him. But he was born too early. I was only 26 weeks.
She stopped crying and stared fixedly at the floor.
She told me that he was too young to survive. There wasn't any need to go to the hospital. They'd just take him away from me. So I held him for 4 hours until he died.
Lupin got down on his knees in front of her, certain that he would stop breathing. We have had a son. Elizabeth and I. We had a son.
What did he look like?
He said hoarsely.
He had a lot of dark brown hair.
She sniffed and blew her nose again.
And blue eyes. He looked like you. And Teddy.
I went into your office one day when it was full moon and looked at Teddy's baby pictures.
They looked quite a bit alike then. Except he was so tiny.
She burst into sobs again.
And when I saw you again, it was years later, and I thought, why should I tell him now when it'll only hurt him? But then I read your letter, and I felt so awful. I thought, he never knew. I never even told him.
When was he born?
Lupin whispered gruffly.
February 18th,
she replied forlornly and drew her quilt around her shoulders.
That's another reason I wish winter were over. I hate winter once Christmas is done. I dread that date every year.
Elizabeth, that's tomorrow.
He felt desperate to hold her in his arms, to comfort her, but she seemed lost in a private world of grief.
I know that,
she said in a small voice.
Where is he?
He could barely get this out.
The church cemetery, where she'd been raised. Matilda, the midwife. She took him there a couple of days later to bury him. Her son was a stonemason, and he made the headstone.
Have you been back there?
He asked gently.
I went all the time at first, she replied quietly.
and I just couldn't stand it, going there by myself. I started going back on his birthdays and Mother's Day, you know, so I could remind myself I really was a mother, even if nobody knew it.
Can I go with you tomorrow?
You don't have to ask me, Remus. He's your son, too,
she replied sternly, but he thought she sounded a bit cheered.
And I'd love to have someone go with me. No one's going to want you going off anywhere tomorrow, not after what happened today, especially Teddy and William. They'll be following you about.
Let's go tonight, he told her decisively.
Oh, it's miles away, up in Porter's Bar,
she hesitated.
That doesn't matter,
he replied, and she gave him a tiny bit of a smile.
I suppose that's so. Well, let me get dressed.
Lupin stood outside her door and put his hand against the wall, his heart pounding so violently he felt rather dizzy. When Elizabeth appeared, she was wearing jeans and a green velvet blouse with a short brown mink coat, her eyes very large and her pale face. Lupin, who had summoned his long blue traveling cloak, stood and stared at her for a long moment. I just want to take care of you. He didn't know where this fiercely protective impulse had come from, but it was impossible to resist. She looked very young, lost, bewildered, and unhappy.
Elizabeth,
he whispered, although he had no idea why he was doing so, since they were the only people on the floor.
Are you all right?
She nodded almost defiantly.
I'm sorry,
his voice broke. I wasn't there for you.
I didn't tell you so you'd feel bad,
she responded firmly.
Let's go.
What's the name of the place?
He did not want to say the word cemetery.
Newgate Street Cemetery,
she replied in a trembling voice. When he wrapped his cloak around her to apparate, he held her closer than they both knew was necessary. But Elizabeth made no protest and rested her head against his shoulder, her arms around his neck. The warmth of her body was so intoxicating he almost forgot the dreadful reason for the trip and stood for a moment lost in the sensation of holding her.
Go, he told himself sternly, and took out his wand. Newgate Street Cemetery, Potter's Bar, England.
This place looks like a French bordello, Quentin thought to himself as he looked around his bedroom, which now boasted an ornately gilded, hand-painted Louis XV bed, and what he found to be an inordinate amount of flowered wallpaper, tapestried bergères, and gilt-framed paintings. But what does it matter? A bedroom, he thought, wasn't good for much except sleeping and shagging, and the room was still quite useful for either. Once he told Solange the news about Lupin, she decided they should immediately go to bed and celebrate with a lot of sex. Not that this wasn't the general plan for every night anyway. Afterwards, she sat up cross-legged, chattering to him like a magpie, which he always found very cute, but he kept crossly telling her to put her shirt back on or he was going after her again.
Stop it, she said archly. I'm hot, and just because you can see my boobs doesn't mean you have to fuck me.
I hope it does, he replied lazily and ran his fingers down her back.
So tell me what happened when he showed up in your office, she squealed delightedly. What did you do?
He didn't show up. He was sitting in a chair when I walked in. It scared the bloody hell out of me.
Solange waited for further details, but none were forthcoming.
Well, then what did he jump up and you hugged each other?
Quentin started laughing.
Right, that's exactly what happened. It was a touching scene.
Solange gave him a suspicious look and folded her arms across her chest.
You didn't yell at him, did you?
Quentin scowled.
That fucker was drinking beer with his buddies when we all thought he was dead.
Oh, I can't believe you yelled at him,
she said sternly but started giggling.
After the horrible day he had.
Don't laugh, she told himself firmly, but found it was impossible to be angry when he was staring at her as avidly as he was.
You better put on a shirt, I'm telling you, he said warningly.
Quit changing the subject, she replied determinedly. So what happened then?
Not much,
Quentin replied dispassionately, and Solange gave him a clearly skeptical look.
I'm going to ask him about it in the morning,
she informed him loftily.
All right, he responded irritably. I sort of chased him around the room and threw some shit at him.
You chased him around the room?
She screeched and giggled again.
You didn't hit him, did you?
No, I did not, he replied in an offended tone.
I don't believe you,
she said coyly.
I didn't, Quentin reiterated stubbornly. I couldn't catch the fucker. He's too damn quick.
Solange toppled over on the bed, still laughing.
You two are so funny. This is great.
No, this is going to be great,
he responded and made a dive for her as she let out a few unconvincing squeals of protest.
I told you.
Someone knocked frantically on the door. What? Quentin shouted.
Man, get up!
Kenny hissed desperately from the other side.
Get up, dude! There's some crazy lady here! She's fucking crazy, man!
Get the hell out of here, Quentin barked out wrathfully. You're just stoned, Kenny.
No, I'm not, dude. Well, maybe I am, man, but she's still here. She's coming down the hall right now, dude, he wailed urgently. It's that lady with all the beads and shit for the party, man. They can tell me I was gonna die.
Quentin winced at the horrendous screeching voice of Sybil Trelawney.
Where is he? She shrieked. Where is the muggle who dared to smash the crystal bowl of my great-great-grandmother?
Oh my God, Quentin said disgustedly and reached for his bathrobe. That damn witch is fucking crazy. She's gonna crucio my ass or something.
Kenny!
Solange yelled hysterically.
Go get Lupin! Hurry!
I tried that, dude, Kenny screamed in an exasperated tone. He's not in his room. Teddy's asleep in his bed, man. But Lupin's gone! Sybil let out a little scream and threw herself against the door, and Quentin and Solange exchanged bemused glances.
Well, Solange said with a small smile, she's not much of a witch if she can't get in a locked door, is she? She's trying to kill me, dude!
Kenny shouted frenetically, and Quentin banged out the door looking very threatening, even in his black bathrobe. It was definitely in his favor that Sybil has always been quite frightened of Snape. Leave him alone, he yelled as Sybil shoved Kenny up against the wall and smacked him repeatedly on the cheek with her largest bangle, and she turned on Quentin as Kenny rubbed the large red welts on his cheeks and howled pitifully.
You, the muggle that broke my crystal!
She squealed out in a high-pitched voice that was becoming more of a squeak of rage than a shriek, now that Quentin was towering above her with a very Snape-like expression.
For fuck's sake, shut up! Yes, I broke your damn crystal ball, and I'll buy you a new one! They're very expensive,
Sybil sniffed out haughtily.
And very rare.
No shit, Quentin replied impatiently. I'm fucking rich if you hadn't noticed.
And how will you get a crystal ball?
She screamed in a voice that he decided was octaves above any a muggle woman's could reach.
I'll send Remus, he snapped out. He'll get you one. Now will you please go home? I live at Hogwarts, she replied disdainfully. I'll have you know I am the divination professor.
Oh, for God's sake, Quentin snapped angrily. I've read the bloody books.
Oh, oh, Sybil gasped with anger. You're the rudest man I have ever met, and I will be certain to tell Remus of this.
Tell him then, Quentin responded rudely. See if you can find him first. Sybil gave him a haughty look.
He is not in this house, she whispered in a mysterious voice.
And how do you know this? Quentin demanded skeptically.
I looked for him first, Sybil replied angrily. That drug-obsessed person said his rooms were on floor 15, and I found his marauder's map of this house. And he is not here. He's in Potter's Bar, she finished triumphantly.
Solange, who had come out behind Quentin, looked it up at him in disbelief.
No fucking way, Quentin told Sybil insolently. You've read it wrong. You wouldn't go out anywhere tonight, especially that far away.
He is there, Sybil replied in an ethereal voice and fluttered her eyelids wildly.
Yes, he is there. He is there with someone named Elizabeth, she intoned dramatically.
What? Quentin said in a stunned voice and looked at Solange.
What the fuck?
She doesn't even like eating at the same table with him,
Solange responded in a practical voice.
She'd never go anywhere with him. They don't even talk to each other.
Sybil, meanwhile, had apparently lost interest in Lupin's whereabouts.
I expect a brand new authentic Ministry of Magic proof Seer certified crystal ball! She shouted defiantly and disapparated with a crack.
Kenny hurried off down the hallway, and Quentin and Solange stared at each other with bewildered expressions.
What in the world do you think she's talking about? Solange asked.
Quentin shook his head. She's crazy, that's all. She's read the stupid thing wrong.